Welcome back into the program today. It's Sports Call on Tiger 95.9 FM and on the Tiger Communications app. JJ Jackson with Ryan Lavoie. Eric McDade is here with us now. And Brooks Childress hanging out in the building as well. So it's time. We're covering the bases with our buddy Eric McDade. E-Money, what's going on, my man?
What's happening, fellas? How y'all doing?
Doing quite well. Things much different than the last time we had you in studio.
A little bit different,
man. An entirely different football coach leading the Auburn Tigers.
That's right.
A college football landscape that is a little bit different as well. New college football playoff rankings coming out tonight at 6 o'clock. And we saw three or four top 10 teams lose this past weekend in the sport of college football. So I'm really intrigued, fellas, on how that's going to change this evening.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of scenarios. I think most importantly for Auburn people, most excitingly for Auburn people, Alabama losing to LSU is going to put them probably around 10th, I would say. And as long as LSU does not lose both of their remaining SEC conference games, LSU's going to the SEC championship game. Or at least Alabama would not be. Let me rephrase that. If LSU loses once and Ole Miss wins this weekend, Ole Miss would go. But either way, Alabama is blocked as long as LSU does not lose both their conference games. And if that's the case, Alabama is not making the college football playoff without access to the SEC title game and having two losses. So that's one important domino that fell. The other one was Clemson. Clemson was a team that a lot of people kind of thought was overvalued. They had skirted by a couple close games in the ACC. They were ranked teams, but not traditionally teams people respect, you know, like Wake Forest and Syracuse. Those are teams that traditionally are not great at football, however, having good seasons. And then they go to South Bend and they get dumped by Notre Dame. And I know Notre Dame is a different team now than they were. They're up to, I think, 6-3. They've won 4 out of 5, something like that. They beat North Carolina. North Carolina's only loss of the year, speaking of ACC teams, is to Notre Dame. However, it's still not a great Notre Dame team. So that loss probably took Clemson out of the playoff as well. They're probably going to fall. I wouldn't be shocked to see them around 12 or 13 because you start to time out everything in every order. So they're going to be behind the two Pac-12 teams, I feel, Oregon and USC. They're going to be behind, I think, LSU, because I think that Clemson's resume is not going to look as good. And then if you drop them below LSU, do you also drop them below Ole Miss, who's ultimately just lost once? And their only loss is to LSU, which would be a better loss than Clemson. So Clemson's going to be kind of hard to figure, but I can see anywhere to just in front of Ole Miss, where Alabama is, or even behind them, which would be about 12th or 11th. So either way, there's not enough steam in the ACC. You know, North Carolina's the second highest ranked team. They'll probably come in around 15th. Tonight, there's just not enough steam for either one of those one-loss ACC teams. So I think the ACC was eliminated this past weekend.
6 o'clock, we'll have the new college football playoff rankings out. We do every Monday learn of the new AP top 25 for the sport, or Sundays, excuse me. Georgia, the new number one, Ohio State two, Michigan three, TCU four, Tennessee goes from 1 to 5, Oregon six, LSU seven, USC eight, UCLA nine, Alabama 10, Ole Miss 11, Clemson 12. Any thoughts, Brooks?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at how the rankings played out. I want to see how far down they dropped Tennessee, because Tennessee did lose to what they deemed was the number three team in the country, and they were the number one team, but they didn't look good doing it. They got dominated in that game. You looked at the score and you said, oh, 27-13. If you just looked at the score, you're like, oh, that was a, you know, competitive game for a little bit. It wasn't. The game was, there was a garbage time touchdown at the end for Tennessee to get in there, and Georgia kind of looked like they coasted a little bit. So does the playoff committee then bump Georgia up to that one, or do they just kind of slide up and say, no, Ohio State's going to be one because they've been, you know, dominant all year too, and they already deemed Georgia as number three, but Ohio State struggled up there and against Northwestern this weekend. Clemson, it's going to be interesting to see how far they fall, because it is their first loss of the year, but they don't have the resume there. I mean, they haven't played as many, if any, ranked teams on their schedule. the big question for me is how far they do drop Alabama, because they had Alabama at 6, LSU at 10, so that's still a loss to a top 10 team that they had there. So I'm maybe they get down to 10. I would not be shocked if they don't drop them as far as people think they do, because of you know, and I don't want to like to use this argument, but because of brand name and because you lost to a top, you've lost to the two losses on the year is to what you deemed going into this past week as the number one team in the country, and what you deemed going into this past week as the number 10 team in the country. So two top 10 losses there. I don't know how far you drop them. I wouldn't be shocked if they only drop them, you know, a couple spots to that 8 spot, but I'm with Ryan. I think the more likely one is to be 10 around there. Clemson, I don't know what you do with them, because it is only one loss in the year. It is to a questionable Notre Dame team. So I don't know how far you drop them. TCU, you know, how do you drop them below? I don't think you can, you know, drop them below or above, keep them above TCU. Oregon continues to look good. USC, that's another thing, is where do you put USC, because they still only have one loss, but they're another team where the resume is kind of like, you know, yeah, you've got one loss, but it's not, you know, you haven't played a lot of ranked teams in your resume. How far up do you move Ole Miss after this weekend? Yeah, and then the other question is, how far up do you move, and I know this is nobody, you know, not as many people care about this, but how far up do you move like a Tulane, a UCF after this weekend, both getting wins? Because that's another, you know, thing, because they're one of those teams, as of right now, is going to be in the New Year's Six games, because of the group of five team makes a New Year's Six game. So Tulane, UCF, how far up do you move those two guys?
You got to think about Liberty, too.
And yeah, true. They weren't ranked this past week.
Yeah, so I think they made a pretty strong statement going on the road and beating an SEC team. So it will be interesting to see.
Who's your playoff four?
Right now? I mean, it's pretty obvious the four, right? I mean, it's four undefeated teams in the Power Five conferences. So Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, TCU. Georgia's got to be number one. I mean, I honestly don't know why they weren't number one last week, to be honest. But now they have what would probably be, we call maybe the best win in the country with the win over Tennessee. I mean, they really dominated that game. I think it ended up, like you said, 27-13. But, I mean, that was one of those games that I think they could have won by 30 if they wanted to. So, they got to be number one. I guess Ohio State, Michigan, I mean, they could be – I mean, you could see that either way. They're probably 2-3. I actually probably – I mean, I like Ohio State a little bit better because I like Stroud. But resume-wise, they're really similar, I think. And then TCU's got to be four. I mean, if Tennessee had played a little bit better, I honestly think they could have maybe still been four. But, yeah, it's got to be those four for the playoff right now.
Yeah, no, and I think with Ohio State and Michigan, really similar resumes. The only difference is Michigan hosted Penn State and beat them. Ohio State went to Penn State.
Right.
And then Michigan just doesn't have a non-con game that's worth anything. I mean, their best non-con win is, I guess, UConn or Colorado State, whereas at least Ohio State did play Notre Dame. That's, again, not a great Notre Dame team, but I wouldn't actually be shocked getting up to 6-3 if they did rank them this week, 24th, 25th, something, because they are a big brand, as you've talked about, Brooks, with some other
teams. I don't like to use the big brand argument,
but
sometimes
it happens.
It's real. There's bias that's associated with the brand. Like, I think they were saying this last week. You know, if TCU, what was TCU last week? Were they
seven? Yeah, they were behind
somebody. Yeah, if they were Texas, right, with some of the things that they have accomplished this season, if you looked at that resume, but it was Texas and not TCU, they probably would not have been set.
No doubt.
I'm going to say, there's only, looking at last week's rankings, what you brought that, and you brought up Texas, there's only one 3-loss team in that top 25 last week, and it was Texas.
Yeah. Now, and of course, they have circumstances that I would defend them in, because they did lose Quinn Ewers in one of the games that he did not play, they lost, and so that factors into some of it. But, you know, I think that, you know, what will be interesting here is college football never – or very seldom does it just go status quo from a certain point out. So it seems pretty easy to make those four the playoff. However, you know, one of them will have to lose, because Ohio State and Michigan both can't win that game. So how that game goes and who loses it will determine something very important, which is them or the loser of that game or Tennessee. Because now Tennessee's not going to the SEC championship game, and neither will the loser of that Ohio State-Michigan game. They won't go to the Big Ten championship game. So how that team, whoever it may be, loses that game is going to be very important in deciding between those two. Now, I think Tennessee has a wonderful resume. I completely understand why they were ranked number one, because they had a win at LSU now, which looks better and better by the day. I know LSU has gotten better and better as the year's gone along, but that's a top 10 team that they smashed on the road. They did beat Alabama, who, assuming if they beat Ole Miss, will remain a top 10 team when the season ends. Those are two top 10 wins that Tennessee will have, whereas the loser of the Ohio State-Michigan game will not have any top 10 wins, because Penn State will not be ranked in the top 10. Notre Dame can't get all the way to 10 by the end of the year. No one else on that schedule will be in the top 10. So I guess my point is, the only path for Ohio State Michigan loser to being above Tennessee, in my view, is a very close loss, because it was concerning that Tennessee got beat fairly bad on the road at Georgia. But again, two top 10 wins, and you're not seeing anything comparable to that out of the Big Ten teams right now. So unless you lose a heartbreaker in that Ohio State-Michigan game, a 24-21, a 34-31 type of game, if you lose by a similar margin, you lose by two or three possessions, then I can't really argue that Big Ten team over Tennessee. And that's important, because that could be the fourth playoff spot. If Georgia wins out, if you have TCU went out, which, to be fair, is not a sure thing at all. I think they've still got Texas, for example. They'll have a Big 12 championship game against a competent team. So that's not a given. You know, I feel good about the winner of Ohio State-Michigan not losing the Big Ten championship game, because the other side of the Big Ten's been pretty dreadful, to be honest with you. But that could end up being the last playoff spot. Is your opinion of one loss Ohio State-Michigan loser, one loss Tennessee, or a third team in here, the one-loss Pac-12 champ?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think the Pac-12 was probably the biggest winner in what happened this weekend, because you got Oregon, USC, and UCLA all sitting there with one loss. I mean, I don't think UCLA is maybe the tier of Oregon, USC. They have a chance to prove that, I guess, when they play USC. But, you know, if we get to the Pac-12 championship game and it's number four Oregon versus number five USC or something like that, that becomes a de facto quarterfinal, right? Like it's almost like a play-in game, I think, if both of those teams are ranked in the top six.
If they rank them there, but I think Tennessee could still be ahead of both Oregon and USC right now.
Yeah, but I think what happens if that happens, though, if those two teams are playing and Tennessee's at home and they didn't win, they didn't win their division because they lost to Georgia, understandably, but I think there's something to be said when they're sitting at home and then you've got these two teams with one loss playing in a, you know, Pac-12 championship game. That bias will kind of play into it, and the recency of seeing those two teams play a championship game, I think, might really just trump whatever Tennessee's done.
It will be a big unknown, but I think that the Pac-12 might be better off if it's not Oregon, because although Tennessee did not look great against Georgia, Oregon looked awful against Georgia.
You got a good point.
And so that's the one thing I would caution, that I don't know what they would do. Would they care? Would they simply write it off as its first game of the year? Oregon would do far better this time around?
Yeah.
Or would they really match them up? Because another thing, too, is Tennessee obviously went to Georgia, and that was a quote-unquote, I know it was in the state of Georgia, but it was a neutral site game of sorts. It's not as bad as going to Sanford Stadium. So that's something that those are complicated things they might have to work through. Now, more chaos happens, more losses happen. That can be one thing. Also, what would screw things up royally is if Georgia lost the SEC title game, whether that be to two-loss LSU or one-loss Ole Miss. If Ole Miss were able to beat Alabama and LSU, do choke one off here at the end of the season, because then you start to talk about, do you value two-lost LSU with wins over Alabama and Georgia towards the end of the season over a one-loss Pac-12 champion at that point? Can you forgive one extra loss in favor favor of a better grouping of wins and a more timely grouping of wins, especially if you beat Georgia. Then you get into the chaos of do you have to ignore the result of that game and still put Georgia in the playoff and not LSU? Or do you have to put them both in because you acknowledge Georgia's one of the top four teams in the country? However, LSU's got to go too because they just beat them. There are still plenty of complicated scenarios if one or two of the right losses happen. If what you're talking about, if it's pretty smooth and these teams that are undefeated keep winning out, it's very self-explanatory for everybody. But it only takes one or two of the right kind of results to really muddy this picture and make there be a lot of judgment calls.
334-887-3401 or toll free at 1-888-9-TIGER-9 if you would like to call in. 6 o'clock tonight, we'll have the new college football playoff rankings. Auburn football plays on Saturday night against Texas A&M. 6:30 kickoff for the Tigers in that one. A reminder, Friday, we're going to be broadcasting live from the Auburn Alumni Center for another edition of Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show. And then, yeah, like we mentioned, TCU, number 7 last week, unbeaten in the Big 12. Can they run the table? That's the question that remains at large. Can they do it?
So it's at Texas this week,
Saturday,
which is a huge one, and then at Baylor, who's at least respectable, and then they host Iowa State, where they should be able to win. I at least mention the Baylor game because it's college football, and anytime you go on the road, and TCU's good, but TCU's had some close calls. They haven't really thumped many teams. They didn't thump Texas Tech last week. They didn't thump West Virginia, and West Virginia's going to about to fire their head coach. They did play well against Kansas State, but they had obviously a close game against Kansas. I mean, TCU has not necessarily whooped up on people, unless your name is Oklahoma, this year. And so, again, any of these road games, especially the Texas game, but I'd even throw the Baylor game out there, these next 2 weeks will test TCU. They'll be the testers. And again, there'll be a Big 12 championship game. I'm not sure exactly who's in line. I think Kansas State would be in line to play in that game with them. Kansas State did already lose to them this year, but TCU, because it's not as known of a commodity, because they have had some of these close games, that's the team I feel a little more wobbly about. I feel good that the Ohio State-Michigan winner is not losing the Big Ten championship game. And I feel pretty good that one of the Pac-12 teams, Oregon, USC, or UCLA, will come out of there as a one-loss conference champion at some point. But, you know, the TCU dynamic was what would really start the debate process, because if TCU loses, I think it's a similar effect to Clemson, where I don't think one loss TCU has the right of way over just about anybody we're talking about.
So curious to see how the SEC also shapes up in these rankings and predictions for what could take place. As we end this first hour, let's go rapid fire here, because Ryan, I hate to bring this up, but there is a possibility that the right losses take place and Alabama could be back in the SEC title game, right?
Those are far-fetched, though, because LSU has to lose,
right,
to both Arkansas and Texas A&M.
They need to lose both of
those
games.
They have to lose both, because if Bama beats Ole Miss, both those teams have two losses. LSU has one in the SEC currently. If LSU all finishes with two, will they beat Ole Miss and Alabama? They break the three-way tie by beating them both. So LSU has to lose one more game than Alabama. And, of course, Alabama could just go ahead and lose in Oxford this weekend. It wouldn't be shocking the way Bama has struggled on the road. But yeah, LSU has to lose for Alabama to make the SEC championship game. LSU has to lose to both Arkansas and a lowly Texas A&M.
LSU or Ole Miss?
On who makes it?
Yeah.
I'm still going to go LSU because I don't know if Ole Miss will beat Alabama.
LSU or Ole Miss?
LSU.
LSU or Ole Miss?
LSU.
Bayou Bengals. Man, how about that?
Go Tigers.
We've done it. We have reached the end of the hour here on Sports Call. Let's talk Auburn football. They need a new head football coach, Cadillac Williams. What a debut he had on Saturday. I want to talk about that and a whole lot more. Our buddy Eric McDade is in the building as well. We continue to cover the bases after this. 2 hours in the books, and we're rolling.
2 hours of sports call are finished. Don't touch that radio dial. We've got one more hour to go. Whether you're leaving work, cruising around town, or listening on demand, we've still got some fun left for you. To be part of the show, give us a call at 334-887-3401 locally or toll-free at 1-888-9-TIGER-9. Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show has been on the air since 1995 and is ready for 60 more minutes of fun. Now, let's get this hour of Sports Call started.
Third and final hour of Sports Call getting started today on Tiger 95.9 FM and on the Tiger Communications app. JJ Jackson inside the studio with Ryan Lavoie, Brooks Childress, and our guy Eric McDade covering the bases with Eric McDade, State Farm, right now on the program. He is informing us that we look tired. We look like we don't have a whole lot of energy. And so I would agree. Let's change that. It's a Tuesday. Yeah. Feeling good. We need a little bit more spice here in the studio,
more
man.
Rest, what a weary, man. No.
We got to pick it up just a little bit. Eric, since you were last here, Auburn changed football coaches. Brian Harsin is no longer the man leading the Tigers football program. Cadillac Williams is on an interim basis. How much fun did you have watching that game on Saturday night?
That was as much fun as I've had watching Auburn lose in my entire life, man. I haven't felt that good about Auburn football in a couple years. It was just really fun to see the way those kids fought. You know, they were giving everything they had. You know, they got behind Cadillac. I mean, I think the whole fan base is just really excited for Cadillac. Kudos to whoever it was that really made that call to put Cadillac in charge. We all love Cadillac. He's an impressive person. He was a great player here. And so I think that was really kind of the shot in the arm the program needed. The kids played hard. I think when we got behind, I think at one point it was 24-3. And I think, you know, not to pile on the guy, but I think under Harsin, I think this is a team that might have folded. And those kids just kept fighting. You know, they kept fighting, and they just really seemed like they believed in each other to the point where, you know, we thought we should win the game. It almost felt like a win. Somebody said it felt better than the Missouri game, which we won. But, I'll take the win any day. But, yeah, it's cool. It's cool to see. I'm really rooting for Cadillac, man. He's such an impressive person, and he cares about Auburn. He's an Auburn man. Those kids will run through a wall for him. I mean, I wanted to suit up and play, man, after watching some of those videos and listening to him talk. It's really cool. So
Zach Etheridge is pulling hamstrings on the sideline.
Yeah, those guys.
Trying to get the timeout there. I mean, that was insane.
Yeah, that was a group effort, man. It just was really, you know, you could feel those guys just pulling together, just trying to squeeze everything out that they could to get a win.
Did you think Mississippi State was going to miss the field goal at the end of regulation?
I did.
I thought that. I mean, kudos to him for trying to ice the kicker.
Yeah, I never seen anybody ice the kicker twice with 30 seconds left. That was an interesting decision. But he's the first time head coach, but I didn't mind it. I wish he would have maybe kept the timeouts in his pocket, but it is what it is, man. I mean, at that point, he's just going for it. He's just trying stuff, see what happens. So,
well, I appreciate it because we saw that scenario actually play out in both the Auburn and the Alabama games that night. So what Cadillac decided was they were not going to do much offensively with the 30 seconds, 20-something seconds. Yeah. So they were going to empty the clip right there and say, we're going to make this kid wait as long as possible to actually kick this. And if he makes it three times, great for him. But we're not going to be able to be aggressive offensively. We don't want to turn it over, do something weird. And so he was using those timeouts. In the LSU-Alabama game, Brian Kelly let Riker kick immediately. He did not call timeout. He had to, just like Auburn. However, he took a knee when he got the ball with 21 seconds. They played for overtime. And I thought that was interesting because I thought, okay, if you know you're taking a knee, even with both timeouts, why don't you at least call one of them and try and ice Reichard? And they didn't. So Cadillac it ended up working. LSU ended up winning. Auburn did not end up winning. But the timeout strategy was probably actually played correctly by Cadillac compared to Brian Kelly, because if you know you're not going to use those timeouts offensively, you know you're not going to be aggressive because for whatever reason, you might as well let the kicker think about it because kickers are head cases and you just don't trust, especially college kickers, you just don't trust kickers. And so I thought that was the right move. To his credit, he kicked it every time and he made it in the same fashion really every single time. That second kick kind of glanced off the upright a little bit, but still went in. But all three of that kid's the kicks were on that left part of the goalposts that he made in a very similar fashion. So, you know, he just – he was a rock in that instance, but I didn't think Cadillac was wrong to do it. But, you know, it you could see the life. And for the first time, I mean, that was Auburn's best second half in a very long time. Oh, yeah. And it speaks to a criticism everyone had of Brian Harsin, justifiably so. It looked like they went in the halftime every game, picked their nose for 20 minutes and just did absolutely no adjusting and would always come out with a worse second half than the first half. And this was the first time they played a decidedly better second half than first half in quite some time.
Yeah, that was refreshing to see, man, especially with the kind of a patchwork coaching staff where, you know, these guys are, you know, you got guys up there calling plays that have never called plays before. It's not their playbook. And Cadillac's the first time head coach. You can second guess some of the stuff he did. I mean, you know, going for the fourth down early in the first quarter and not kicking the field goals. And you can second guess some of that stuff, man, but he was just going for it. And so, you know, I appreciate it. You know, he did much better than I expected. I do think we got to kind of pump the brakes. I've seen a lot of people that are overly excited about it. You know, I'm part of a few groups on Facebook where people are suggesting we storm the field if we win to show appreciation to Cadillac. I even saw one guy said we should put the 24 at half at midfield instead of the AU. And I'm just like, hey guys, we all love Cadillac, but this is going
that's
off
intense.
The rails. I was like, man, this is going off the rails. We love Cadillac, man, but we gotta keep it in the road. I do think Cadillac can earn himself an interview. He's definitely a guy that I could see leading the program at some point somewhere, even if it's not at Auburn, because I think he's the kind of coach that some kids will go to war for. So
it just means more to him that it is at Auburn, that it is the school they loved so much and played for, and got to wear the AU on his helmet for sure. Auburn and Texas A&M, both teams have lost 5 straight games. It is a sucky feeling that Auburn ended last season on a 5-game losing streak, and fellas, here we are. Auburn is once again back on a 5-game losing streak. And not fun.
And Texas A&M is, I think, as well.
Yeah.
And with those two teams, I just don't know how many times you've had two SEC teams on 5-game losing streaks.
Third time in the last 4 years. Okay. Cole Kubelik tweeted that a little bit
earlier
today.
Third in the last 4?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm surprised.
Vanderbilt exists.
Well, true. But the programs, I'll tell you what, programs that actually expect to win games. No offense to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, if they go 6-6, great stuff. We get to go to a bowl. There's a 13th game we get to play. That's how Vanderbilt acts if they're able to put that together. But for these two programs, I mean, Texas A&M paying Jimbo Fisher gobs of money to have this awful season. Auburn really already can't make a bowl game unless you think they can go to Tuscaloosa and win. I mean, I'm sure they're going to play harder than we can imagine because Cadillac Williams is going to egg them on to do so, but I cannot fathom that. But this Texas A&M game is going to be, we asked Justin Ferguson about it, they're going to have a lot of energy in the building. I mean, it's not going to feel like 3-6 versus 3-6. It's going to feel like two top 25 teams in a night game in Jordan-Hare. And when's the last time Auburn had a night game?
LSU game?
LSU.
Yeah.
Atmosphere was crazy.
And that was a great atmosphere, too. So, you know, since then, they've rattled off a couple of games, 11 a.m. games, and they obviously did have the night game on the road in Starkville, but it's going to be a really good environment, and the energy is going to be there. And you saw the video of Cadillac putting out their start of the week. Awesome. So they're going to play hard, and I really think Auburn has an excellent chance to win on Saturday with all that energy and passion that's going to be in the building. To A&M's credit, they haven't necessarily quit either. However, they did give up a million to Florida. They had like 18 players out with the flu between their offense and defense. I assume they'll get all those guys back for this weekend. But two teams at 3-6 that did not anticipate having these kind of seasons.
Auburn needs to find their next head coach. Athletic Director John Cohen was introduced today to start our festivities and to move forward with this Auburn football program, knowing that his first hire is going to be something that defines his legacy, his tenure as Auburn's athletic director. He was the man responsible for hiring Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State. He was also the man responsible for hiring Mike Leach at Mississippi State. Now he's got to sift through candidates for this Auburn job. And the popular names we continue to hear, Lane Kiffin, Deion Sanders, Hugh Freeze, are the most three popular names that folks call in and chat with us here on the program. What say you, Eric? Where are you at in regards to this next football coach?
You know, I like all three of those guys. You could look at them in any order. I think Hugh Freeze put an excellent he put his hat in the ring excellently this past weekend with a road win over an SEC team. That was cool.
No doubt. I mean,
you know what Deion's going to bring to the table. We're going to get the guys if we get Deion, for sure. And Lane Kiffin is, I mean, we know what he's about. Personally, I probably out of that group would prefer Lane myself. Probably Deion second and then Hugh. But, you know, like I said, I'm my outside the box guy is Chip Kelly. I think it's just something about his, you know, his style of coaching. I think that will work here. But it'll be interesting, man. I think this is one that, you know, we got to get this one right. You know, so I think that's what kind of maybe takes the guys like Deion maybe off the table. You gotta get a guy that you know what you're getting. You gotta get this one
right.
I mean, I saw something earlier that was really insane that we've paid more money to coaches than Alabama has since Saban's been there. And that is that's unacceptable. So, you know, we got to get this one right, man, because if we don't, you know, we're going to be even further, you know, further in the hole. And the SEC is only getting better every year. And then you're going to add Oklahoma and Texas to the mix in a couple years. You know, we got to put ourselves in good position. We got to go get a good, you know, somebody that can be here for 10 years or so and right the ship.
You still on the Lane train?
I have a first class ticket.
First class.
Yeah.
Good service.
Yeah. I'm.
Does that get you like time with juice?
Yeah, it should. yeah.
You accepting seatmates at this point?
Yeah, we welcome all to the Lane train.
It's pretty full.
Tickets are hard to come by. Yeah.
Might just have to add some more cars to the train. But I think that
this guy,
yeah. I just think that he checks the boxes for what Auburn's going for. I think he's everyone knows about the offensive genius he is. And I think that the recruiting part of it, you know, he has really, you know, at Ole Miss, he's not done an incredible job as a high school recruiter. He has, though, complained at length about the NIL situation, of which it is clearly better at Auburn. But he has portaled very well. I mean, he has done an excellent job in the transfer portal. The thing I wanted to see from him, because obviously Auburn was in this predicament 2 years ago, we're not far removed from the previous coaching search. Even at that time, I liked Lane Kiffin a lot. But at that time, I had more of a reservation because I had not seen him stay in one place for too long. And more importantly, I had not seen him turn over a roster as a head coach. And now that I've seen him move from Matt Corral to Jackson Dart, move from a backfield of Snoop Connor, Jerry Neely, and Henry Parrish into a Quinshon Judkins, Zach Evans backfield. I've seen them flip all these skill position players, and they're still 8-1. You know, even if they lose to Bama, they went 10-2 last year, went to a New Year's Six Bowl. They could do the same thing this year. Two of the best years Ole Miss has had in a very long time with completely different sets of guys in the offensive backfield. That's proof to me he can turn over this roster, and the transfer portal that he's ability that he's shown is something that Auburn could really use if they're trying to expedite the process. And look, you know, it's still going to overall take some time with Auburn because I think the roster's pretty broken at this point, especially when you factor in the best couple of guys like Derek Hall, Tank Bigsby will not be here next year. The roster's going to be in pretty bad shape unless you get 10, 15 guys in the portal that won't give you the depth you need. So, again, you're not going to have some incredible roster next year, but you might have those playmakers if you get the right guys in the portal. And, again, I'm not thinking just the one-year game. Obviously, it's going to take some time, and you want to be good for a long time. And even if you do hit on all cylinders somehow next year. You don't want to be one-year wonders. So I get that it's not all about one set of portal, but I think with Lane Kiffin, you will constantly see great portal, and you will see, I think, better high school recruiting than what you've seen at Ole Miss because of the NIL situation. I think Auburn is in a better position. And then again, it comes back to Lane's a great offensive guy, so we really only focus on what he can do defensively, getting a defensive staff. That would be the biggest question mark, really, I think, in my opinion, the only question mark with Lane Kiffin, is making sure he gets the right defensive staff to where, you know, what's limiting them at Ole Miss is their defense still pretty damn bad overall. They're still winning with it because their offense is so good, but their defense is still bottom tier of the SEC. Finding the right defensive staff to just elevate that defense into a solid defense. So I think that's the biggest thing with Lane. Lane's a distant first for me in terms of candidates.
Yeah. I just wonder how bad he really wants this job, to be honest. I mean, Auburn's a great college job. Don't get me wrong. I mean, but that was, like you said, a couple years ago, maybe one of the biggest things the questions that I had about him was, you know, will he get those wondering eyes for a bigger program? He's been at Tennessee and USC, and he coached the Raiders. Like, you know, he's coached at some big name places, and Ole Miss isn't quite that. But I think, you know, you have to kind of wonder, does he see Auburn as a destination, or does he see it as another pit stop? You know, you got to kind of look at it that way. You have to wonder how he sees that, or does he want to stay at Ole Miss and maybe keep winning 8, 9, 10 games in a comfortable place until 2 or 3 years from now, until the exact thing he wants open up, whether it be, you know, Alabama or a Texas or whatever the case may be. Just something that he may see as more desirable than Auburn. You got to kind of wonder about that too. But, you know, it's...
I kind of think of it too. I think of it in two forms. So one is, Auburn, where would you rank it as a job in the country? Somewhere in the 10 to 15 range? 15-ish?
Yes.
All right. So there's only a couple handfuls of jobs that are better. Some of those jobs he just will not have access to. Like, he will not be the Georgia coach. He will not be the Ohio State coach. Ryan Day and obviously Kirby Smart locked in there. As long as Lincoln Riley wants to be at USC and not go to the NFL, Lincoln Riley at USC locked in there.
Well, he can't go back to USC anyway.
Well, obviously, yeah. The past tenure at USC, I also would put in there Clemson, as long as Dabo Swinney is not, you're not trying to bolt anywhere else.
Random thought: if Harbaugh falls off, could you ever see Lane Kiffin at Michigan?
Be a weird fit, but also Harbaugh's multiple years away from having,
you know, but
things are so crazy that we say it, these things won't happen, right? Ryan Day won't go anywhere, and Harbaugh is going to be where he is. Like, this stuff literally changes like that.
You could have told me
last year that Brian Kelly would be coaching LSU, right? Like, that stuff is
didn't see that one
like
coming
that,
for sure.
Right? So
sure,
I just wanted everyone to mentally picture Lane Kiffin in Michigan gear for a moment.
And I again doubt that would happen too, because some of those things would be fit.
I can't even get my brain to do that.
You know, I think that a lot of those big programs would be out. They wouldn't be open. A couple of them wouldn't be fit, as you mentioned, USC. The only one I would have big trouble with, talked about this a little bit off air, would be if Alabama wanted him.
Right.
If he wanted to replace Saban. The only thing there is, would Alabama want him? You know, I know that he was a assistant there, so they should have warmed up to whatever Lane Kiffin used to be perceived as a wild child, that sort of thing. But it's still different when you're the representative of the program, the head representative.
Absolutely.
So we would have a whole nother discussion there. The other thing would be, though, is that if Auburn truly is, and I believe it is, if it truly is better than Ole Miss and it truly has better access to everything you want, then if he's able to go 10-2 at Ole Miss and he's able to be that good at Ole Miss, that ain't far away from being where you need to be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pretty dang close at that point. They're ranked 11th in the country now, went to New Year's 6 last year. And I keep bringing this up. I'll bring this up probably 87 more thousand times in the next 2 years. When this playoff expands to 12 and teams start making this playoff, that is going to change the barometer of what is truly a really good year for a lot of these programs.
For
because
sure.
You're going to get 4 or 5 SEC programs. It will not be that you have to beat Alabama. Alabama. It would just be nice to beat Alabama because they are your arch rival and that sort of thing. But Alabama will not block you from accessing the college football playoff once this goes to 12 teams. And so, obviously, your goal at Auburn, you want to beat Alabama. You need to mix in some Iron Bowl victories. But I'm saying, even on years where you don't win the Iron Bowl, you could still be 10-2, go to the playoff, maybe cause some havoc in the playoff. And so if you're doing that, how many jobs will you really elevate over the one you're at if you're one of those that is going to the playoff pretty constantly? Because I'll give you an example right now. In the annals of college football history, Clemson is not anywhere near a top 5 or 10 job. Clemson is not a good job at all in college football history. I mean, there would be several in the ACC that would be above Clemson as a job. However, what Dabo has done with it and getting it to the playoff constantly has changed the perception of Clemson. Clemson's now the biggest, coolest program in the ACC. It should, of all the world, for all of eternity, been Miami or Florida State. Maybe even what Beamer did with Virginia Tech would have been above anything Clemson did prior to Dabo Swinney. However, a decade of excellence and going to playoff year after year. Now, Clemson, it's still not Bama or Ohio State in prestige, but it's moved up a whole couple of tiers of what it used to be. It was like a D or C tier job, and now it's a B tier job. And now it's all of a sudden, there might be one job Dabo Swinney would leave the entire country for, maybe two. Right, and it's at Clemson. But when he took the job at Clemson, there would have been 20 jobs easy that you would have left Clemson for. And so my point is, if Lane Kiffin gets to Auburn and it succeeds the way Auburn people hope he succeeds, that number of jobs that he would be willing to leave for might even decline more if Auburn is truly having great success.
Many more updates to come in the Auburn football coaching search, and we'll see whether or not Lane Kiffin is that next man for the Tigers, or is it Deion Sanders? Is it Hugh Freeze? Is it somebody that we're not even talking about? We've got plenty of time to discuss these things with 3 weeks remaining in the regular season for Auburn football. We have been covering the bases with our pal Eric McDade. Always good to see you, my brother. DriveWithEric.com. What can folks do if they go to DriveWithEric.com? What are you capable of accomplishing out there with our good listeners?
Listen, I'm capable of anything, man. No. Hey, drivewitheric.com. Get yourself an auto insurance quote, homeowners quote. Really excited about one thing we have going on. We're able to write life insurance for almost anybody now, regardless of medical conditions and things like that. So, you know, maybe some of the people in the past who have been uninsurable, we've been able to help. So that's a really, really big thing that we've recently rolled out. So definitely if you're looking for that as well, you know, reach out to us. We're here to help.
That's perfect. DriveWithEric.com. Thanks for stopping by. We'll do this again soon, okay?
Thanks, man.